Hello, class. Welcome back. We have another wonderful guest with us this week. This week, it's Samantha Stewart from the Burlington Soccer Club, a club that has a staggering size and level of complexity. And she's here to talk about life in a nonprofit, life in the soccer industry. And I think she's got a lot of extremely interesting things to say to all of you as you embark on your sport management journey. She's had an excellent career so far in business. And I'm really excited to get to her right away, so I won't hold you up any longer. Here is Samantha Stewart.
When you are lonely and destructive and you always second guess what it means when we perceive.
The Burlington Soccer Club, Samantha Stewart. Samantha, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited for this opportunity.
Samantha, tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you find your way into this particular role? And tell us about your journey through education and soccer in general.
All right. Ultimately, I grew up as an athlete. So I've been a high performance athlete my entire life. I played Division I sport. I played youth sport as well. So I'm very well versed on the soccer side. And I never really realized in my foray in that sport that there was an opportunity to work in sport, because you're a child, you're playing, you're so focused on goals and achievement that it never really crossed my mind outside of maybe being a coach or a match official. You don't see anything on the business side because they're not really front facing. So I didn't think this was an option. During my university career, I ended up with a bachelor's of commerce in marketing. So, and then from that, then I did work in sport. I was fortunate to work in golf for the largest owner and operator of golf courses in the country. So I worked there for about 5 years, continued to play, as I like to call them, weekend warrior style. So I continued to participate in soccer. I happened to have a major knee injury in my like early 20s, which really just makes you question life. So at that point in time, I took a step back from what I was doing and really reevaluated if this is where I wanted to be. And at that time, I thought there was more I could give to the space than working in sales and marketing and golf in the private sector, in the private side, right? Privately owned. So it didn't, there wasn't a fit any longer. So I took that time, did my GMAT, and then I left to do an MBA. I took a year off to do, well, I guess 12 months to do an MBA in business strategy, and finished that up, had a fantastic experience, was fortunate enough to help be a graduate assistant in a sports marketing class where I went with Dr. Sherry Bradish, who is very well known in the Brock University space in the sport management program. So I worked with her for quite a few years, even after graduation. And once I finished graduating, I wanted to get back into the sport that I loved and that had given me so much. So I went full steam ahead into the football world. And I started with coaching at the high performance level. So I ended up getting a license through Canada Soccer, like a C license through Canada Soccer. And I ended up working at a variety of clubs in different capacities, whether it was on the technical side and being a female technical lead, so delivering programs to the kids on the pitch, or then I left that to run a club myself through the pandemic, which is its own unique experience. And then I left that, I saw that club through the pandemic, left that club and went back into the marketing space where I am now at the Burlington Soccer Club and have been for 5 years.
What a journey. Oh my, and Sherry Bradish, sport management royalty.
What a little drop in.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Okay, so many threads to pull on there. Let's the most obvious one that jumps out to me is this journey back and forth between the private sector and the nonprofit sector. What would you say to students right now who are hearing this, and many are in their third year, their fourth year, and they're thinking to themselves, you know, I don't really want to work in a nonprofit space. I want to work in professional sport, but maybe don't realize what working in a nonprofit space really is like. What would you say is the biggest difference between those two spaces?
Bureaucracy, for lack of a better term. That's really the truth. Like when you work in an organization, like a nonprofit space, it is a little more nimble because you have less people, less steps to get through to really impact change. It is certainly more direct to the consumer or direct to the member. So you really do see the impact from inception to integration. And I think that's a big piece that you miss in the private sector when you're dealing with hundreds of employees and multiple assets. You don't have as big of an impact. You're just a fish in a pond versus here I'm a fish in a fishbowl. So it's much smaller, but I get to have a larger impact.
Oh, Samantha, you're literally now taking course content right out of the textbook here. That's exactly something that we try. And that's a relatively surprising thing. When you said bureaucracy, and we've discussed this with the nonprofit space versus the private sector, I think the default assumption would be, yes, working in the nonprofit space comes with more bureaucracy. You mentioned the nimbleness there. I'm fascinated by that word there. when you mention how a nonprofit has to, or has been nimble in the past, can you speak to sort of like the necessity to be nimble to sort of meet the challenges that are, that come up every day at Burlington?
Yeah, of course. I mean, at the end of the day, there's always different things that come up, right? Like we're dealing with multiple different user groups, whether it be our coaches, members, match officials, parents, players, PSOs, NSOs. So we're trying to engage with all of these groups. It really does require, and they're drilling things down from the PSO and NSO level that have to be implemented at the grassroots level. But then you're also trying to make sure that all of the other stakeholder groups understand the implementation. So everything moves relatively quickly in that space. So you have to have the ability to adapt, and you have to have the staff that are willing to and open to change for sure. So that has allowed us to be so nimble. And I mean, I don't need to go back to, pre-pandemic. But also in that time, it really did transition the sports space or the nonprofit sports space to realize how important it was to be nimble and to be flexible, because even in that time, the rules were consistently changing and we had to consistently adapt and be open to these, particularly when you were running with a much finer level of staff. So you just really weren't given that choice. And I think that space, or we've taken that on even further now to recognize like, hey, we have to take this feedback, take this information down and implement quickly.
Right. Now, just another couple questions about the macro, sort of how nonprofits operate in general. And then I'll ask you some specific questions about Burlington itself. But this nimbleness, this needing to change quickly, when you're looking for staff, or if you were to be designing, say, a job posting, or if you were designing the sort of the perfect young staff member in your mind, that maybe they are in sport right now, they want to make a difference, they want to do the things you just mentioned, they want to actually implement change. They will find, if they work in private, the sort of private sports sector, that yeah, there's a lot of bosses and levels of bureaucracy between them at MLSC or places like that, because they make a lot of money doing things one way. Whereas, as you mentioned, with the pandemic, we all learned that we had to change very quickly in the sort of nonprofit space. So you're designing your perfect staff member that's going to join your staff. What qualities do you look for in your ideal staff member?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question. Be a problem solver and to really identify all of the areas and variables that impact the problem. I think there's never one perfect solution to a problem, right? Every problem has multiple variables and there's going to be multiple ways in which it can go. But if you're really looking at it from a holistic approach, then it's going to give you the best solution. So I think that's number one. I think being an independent worker, at the end of the day, a lot of us do a lot of roles. We wear a lot of hats. Like you run very lean in the nonprofit sector. So the reality is being able to work independently and not necessarily needing that guidance at all times is incredibly important. And then on that vein as well, just being flexible in your approach to things and being willing to take additional tasks on, like don't put yourself in one box because you will never survive in the space. I think the reality is the minute you do that, you're doing yourself a disservice. So I think it's being, like nimble as yourself. So taking on more, like your role may be in marketing, but that doesn't mean you're just working on branding or you're just working on communication or you're just working on strategy or you're just working on sponsorship. And I could go on, but the reality is you're doing all of it. So I think that's also very important for everybody to know. And it's incredibly non-traditional hours. So you gotta be flexible.
Right. And that seems to be something that seems to be the sport industry just across the board, but certainly in the nonprofit space, given the fact that it's weekends, it's evenings, it's mornings, it's everything, all not 100 hours a week, but it's non-traditional is a great way of describing that. And I think that when you're describing the sort of ideal employee there and you're mentioning the sort of qualities that they have, these are qualities that you, I'm sure, have developed over the course of a very varied professional career, traditional academic route, through the MBA process, your own professional sort of development as an athlete as well. I mean, you played youth sports. I mean, what qualities did you develop in yourself that you find yourself going back to over and over again, either as an athlete or as a student or at any sort of part during your professional journey?
I think ultimately I played team sports my entire life, and I guess was relatively successful in that. So just recognizing that you're a part of a team and part of something bigger than yourself. And at any given time, your role in a team is always going to change. So I really was able to reflect on that as being a former athlete. Like there's times where you're injured, so your role on a team is taking a different backseat and you're taking a different approach. And that would be similar to when you're looking at a problem in your space. Like you're going to bring together multiple departments, but the reality is at any given time, you're going to have to realize where you're going to fit into this problem and where your skill set maybe is best suited. When you're injured, your skill set isn't on the pitch any longer, but your skill set is back supporting your teammates, making sure they have what they need. They're receiving the confidence. They're getting your feedback because you're watching them on the pitch. Versus when you're a starter, it's you're controlling the field. You have to control your mindset, control your contribution, make sure you're giving it 110%. You're actively engaged at all times, and you're very fine-tuned in the technical aspects. So I think teamwork, absolutely, and recognizing where you fall in at any given time, because it always changes, is incredibly important. I think in that vein as well, communication. I don't think there's many things outside of sports or team activities that give you the opportunity to communicate to the same level. And recognizing that every human being has a different communication style. Like, I'm a very direct person. Not everybody receives information that way. That's how I like to receive it. But I have to recognize in my teammates and my colleagues that that may not be the style that works best for them. So if I'm communicating that way and it's not going to get through to them, I need to better understand them. So I think those are some things that I've certainly taken away from not only sport, but I've certainly recognized the importance of them throughout my my sport career.
I mean, and Samantha, consciously or unconsciously, you're really describing how much of a leader you're becoming. I mean, you've become a leader in this organization. You have a leadership position here in Burlington, but throughout your career, you're clearly going to be cultivating leadership habits. And I do note that many of our students, I mean, they come from team sport backgrounds. Many of them have had positive experience in sport, played sport themselves. It's what's led them to where they are right now. So that's helpful to know that you don't have to park these sort of tendencies in their deep recesses of your mind. You can access them relatively frequently. Speaking to how you utilize those faculties that you develop there. Challenges. Let's just sort of address challenges of the nonprofit space. As we are very upfront in this class, it's not direct lines. It's not smooth sailing. There are challenges. What are some reoccurring challenges? Not the challenges that pop up, you know, on a week-to-week basis, but what's something that, you know, if you're going to join the nonprofit space, especially at a level like yours, what's something that year on year consistently is a challenge that you're going to experience?
I think that some of the challenges and that are reoccurring to your point are really just recognizing resources and resource utilization and assigning of time. Like, time is obviously a resource. We can all attest to that. It is very finite, whether we like it or not. And so recognizing the importance of that and how you assign that resource to certain tasks, and then how you identify resources even from a financial perspective, right? Because they are going to be, I would say, sometimes limited. You're running lean. So it's leveraging those resources appropriately within that year or like week to week to make sure you're getting exactly what you need to get done. But there's going to be insight value derived from how you're allocating those resources. It's probably an overarching theme year to year.
Wonderful. And let's talk about your club specifically, and then I'll turn things over to some other. If you're only listening to this right now, we are joined also by members of the Center for Sport Capacity Soccer Working Group. Agram and Amanda are here, and they're going to ask some questions of our wonderful guest, Samantha, as well. But I'd like to ask you questions about Burlington. Tell us about Burlington. Introduce your organization to our students. Give us a sense of what your organization is like. Maybe its size, maybe its staff components, and how is what's life like working in Burlington?
Honestly, I'm probably very biased, having worked here now for 5 years. But in saying all of that and having worked at other sports organizations within our space, I feel we're very fortunate in our club. We are set up exactly like a business, because a nonprofit really is just a different facet of business. So the reality is we have set departments. We have leaders that are recognized in the space that have certain specialties, so they can certainly guide those and guide their teams, which makes us a little more successful. We're absolutely one of the largest clubs, not only in the province, but absolutely in Canada. So we're very fortunate in that regard that we've been able to serve roughly 16,000 registrants in a year. So certainly not a small undertaking, absolutely. And we're one of the clubs in the entire country that really owns and operates everything internally. So we don't have to seek external partnerships as it pertains to other organizations to be able to deliver everything that soccer has in this country. So whether that be our domes, so we have lease agreements with our city. So we own and operate the domes that we have, which is its own separate entity. Then we have every program from 18 months to adults. We're very proud of that. And they're all very successful in their own right. So we're very grateful for that. And then in addition to that, we do a lot of external work with the RPSO, whether it's the technical director diploma and myself and my executive director who support that course and delivery. So we speak with other clubs across the province to provide them our expertise, because not every club is fortunate to have distinct departments and run the way we do. Most run a lot smaller. So we certainly make sure that we give back in that regard. That's very important to us, not only in our space, but obviously here having this conversation with you guys is important to us as well. So that's another thing that makes us very unique and very passionate about what we do.
Samantha, sorry again. Just to reiterate, did you say 16,000 registrants?
I did, yeah.
That is a staggering number. And if you're listening to this right now, think of, maybe you played basketball growing up, maybe you played hockey. Think about the association you played for growing up. I'm willing to bet very strongly that they did not have 16,000 registrants. And most, if not all, of the sort of private sector sports that their students are going to try and pursue do not have a stakeholder base like that. That is staggering, Samantha. That blows me away. So give me an idea of what your day-to-day life is like working. What does a typical week look like for you during season and maybe on the off season?
Right. I don't know if there's anything typical about my weeks and or days, fully being transparent. I think it changes all the time. Like when I'm working on, obviously within our marketing department, it is lean. I recently just hired 2 Brock Sport Management grads. So I'm very fortunate that I have 2 staff now. However, for the previous 4.5 years, I had no staff unless it related to an intern in the summer or like a handful of interns throughout the year. So in that regard, I was dealing with everything from sponsorship to events to partnerships to communication to branding to social media to just literally everything, you like communications to digital strategy. So everything is under me. So it's hard to say there is any typical day as to what I'm dealing with. I think cyclically, there are certain periods of time where my emphasis will be focused on certain bases of programs. Like the wheel doesn't get reinvented. It's really, we have certain times in which things are going to launch historically. So my emphasis and maybe the weeks leading up to a launch are a little different than when programs are going. But outside of that, it's more often than not different day to day, week to week. And in some capacity, I'm covering those APs.
Oh, I mean, that's staggering. And again, Burlington is very fortunate to have someone with your skill set, both as from the on the field and in the classroom, and you're able to utilize those things frequently. I mean, one of the things we tell our students, I constantly am harping on them, you want to develop experience in the sport industry, what you really need is responsibility. And it takes a long time to get responsibility very quickly. Now, your organization is probably a bit different here because of the size of it. But generally speaking, if you want to get responsibility, if you want to have what you spoke to, which is the ability to see a vision executed directly to the actual consumer base, nonprofits, youth sport, like that's the way to go here. I mean, if you actually want to be able to show to an employer later in your professional career, when you're 26, 27, 28, that you have a proven track record, it can be difficult in the pro sports world because you're gonna have to work, you maybe in retail spaces or, you know, food and beverage or some of those stuff that work your way into. Those are hard, you know, things to jump, but you have demonstrated here the level of experience and responsibility that you acquired from a young professional career throughout the nonprofit space. Fantastic, I think, example to set. And then my last question to you, and then I'll turn things over to Amanda, are about how you'd like to impact Burlington in the future. If you had some sort of vision for the Burlington Soccer Club under your, in your specific department, what are some things that you're trying to bring to your organization that maybe over the 5-year timescale you'll see executed if things go perfectly?
Oh, if I could just snap my fingers or click my heels, things that I would love to do. I think ultimately I would really just like to impact the consumer. It really makes a world of difference to the kids at the end of the day. And I think if I could hit anything home, it would be to every other stakeholder group that isn't our players, that they're the focus. And I think that's so incredibly important. And every decision we make, everything long-term we're doing or trying to implement is really for them and for the betterment of the game. And I think it's not only impacting just our club, but impacting our community. I think it's more important for sports organizations, whether you're basketball, whether you're lacrosse, whether you're hockey, whether you're flag football, whether you're rugby, it doesn't matter. I think there's a lot of power to knowledge share, and I wish more organizations were open and honest and transparent with sharing data and sharing information across those platforms, because we all only win if children continue to play sport. Your community thrives when kids continue to play sport, because you're just creating, it's like empirically, you're just creating better human beings and more resilient, more confident, more soft skill driven people. And why would we all not want that? So I always struggle day to day with organizations that do gatekeep. So my long-term goal would for all of us to work better together. So we can create a knowledge share environment. We've started this slowly at our club with our Girls Can Play Day on the female side, obviously because female participation is less than male participation. So that's the goal, is to increase that. But ultimately, I'd like to see it across the board, just more sports organizations engaging with each other. So whether that's, I now offer Boys U7 on a Tuesday, and they now offer Boys U7 in baseball on a Wednesday. So now we can allow multi-sport athletes, and it no longer comes down to a scheduling conflict. Like, maybe that's not the variable that's impacting the parent. Maybe it's something else, but it allows us to be better educated in our decision-making as well as sport providers. So I think there's a lot that would be a larger, longer term hope for the next five, for sure.
Oh, here, Samantha. I mean, so much of that. I mean, that in and of itself is many of the sort of course components in 3PO5. How do you manage those things while trying to keep your stakeholders in mind? And I'll turn things over to Amanda.
I wanted to sort of bring it back to one of the first topics that you guys actually discussed at the beginning. And I believe it was actually the first question that Dr. McKee asked you was, so there seems to be sort of this attitude surrounding, you know, nonprofit versus commercial or professional industries. And it seems to be like a lot of the students, you know, in this program, or just students in general, you know, seem to want to go work for a professional sporting team, or say, you know, they want to work for MLSC or want to work for NHL, which is amazing, amazing, you know, goals and aspirations. But I'm just wondering, obviously, there's amazing, wonderful opportunities within the nonprofit sector and, you know, the smaller clubs and organizations. And just like how you were saying, too, you were extending yourself to do events and social media and marketing, trying to tackle all the different departments within your sporting club. So do you believe that there is large opportunity to sort of improve the visibility or raise awareness within like social media, marketing, events to kind of increase the amount of students who would sort of want to join a nonprofit organization?
I do think so, and I firmly believe in this. I think it's always going to be hard to compete with the glitz and glamour of professional sport. Like, at the end of the day, I recognize I am not the Leafs, nor do I want to be at this present time. Let's be fully transparent with ourselves. I don't even think they want to be themselves. But in saying that, I think that's who you're going up against. And I don't want to say going up against, because I would love to see more people in the sports space at any given time. But I think the reality for people like yourself who are going to be graduates and want to go and tackle the real world, I think it's recognizing there are a handful of jobs and there are thousands of you applying for these jobs. So I don't need to tell you what the statistics behind this are, but that's just the reality. So it's like the NCAA statistics, like how many kids go on to play Division I in this sport? Like, those are proven statistics, and you can find these for your jobs for yourself. That's the reality. And when you go in, you're probably on the ground level doing some sort of aspect of sales, which is great. We all have to start somewhere, but sometimes you don't know where you want to be. You just know you want to be in sport. And if you're incredibly uncertain about what, maybe you did finance, maybe you did sport management, maybe you did marketing, maybe you did anything in that space, and you're just like, there's so many facets to this area and you don't know which one you want to sort of attack, the nonprofit space is going to give you the most well-rounded experience to really determine, to your point, Amanda, where you want to assign your future value or where you want to assign your future efforts. It's going to allow you to experience all of them to some degree. And then you can really just assign a little more effort to that if you want than something else because you enjoy it more. But you have that flexibility in our space. So I think that's incredibly important versus going to work at the NHL, going to work at a Rogers and Sport Partnership, going to work for the MLB. Like, all of this stuff is great. There's less jobs, more people applying, and less well-rounded experience.
That's awesome. Amazing insight on that too. And I think it's also really important to even just bring back what you guys were saying earlier as well. Working in a nonprofit, I think there seems to be this sort of, like I said, an attitude where people seem to think it's small organizations. You're not going to be able to have the different departments to communicate with, get the opportunities that you think you need. Just with Burlington Soccer, you guys are working with over 16,000 athletes. And that is an amazing, a wonderful thing, because you don't think about, kind of like how Dr. McKee said, when you're looking back on your own sporting history, a lot of the clubs, you don't even have that many athletes. So it's interesting to sort of raise that awareness and say, hey, actually, we're going to be focusing and working with tons and tons of different people are going to be getting those opportunities still. So another to kind of, you know, bridge over to another question I have for you, it's just my last question. So I'll give it over to Agram after this. But I was just wondering, because obviously the 16,000 registrants is a very positive benchmark for Burlington Soccer. But how do you measure success beyond just the registrants? You know, for example, is there the community impact, like your external work you were describing earlier? Or is there, you know, inclusion policies that you guys are really proud of, or player experiences that you have testimonies with that can kind of elevate the Burlington soccer experience?
I mean, at the end of the day, business is business, right? Like, so if you were to ask my chief financial officer, he'd be like, well, ROI in the bottom line, which he's not wrong. I need to have a return on investment, and I need to be able to understand where my spend is going and if it's good spend versus bad spend, and then allocate accordingly for the next cycle. But the reality is, because we're a sports organization, because we get to deliver to kids, I think the best way is return players. Like, if players want to come back year over year, regardless of the program, if they want to continue playing in that sport, that is an absolute win. So tracking retention is incredibly important for us. Year over year, season to season, that's a great way to measure it. Testimonials are so fantastic. Obviously, we love that, and we're incredibly proud of those and the positivity that comes out of it. And then the other thing that I think is important for us is we're very big in community and accessible sport. And so we've grown our accessible, like our all abilities program, which is called Embracing Ability. And we're incredibly proud of that. We're expanding that to adults. So that's also a way to, for us to drive wins, right? We're making sport more inclusive and more accessible to more people in our community. And I think that's incredibly important. And that's a great way to measure success as well. I think it just ties down to what is your mission, vision, values, and how can you tie success into that? And it's not always financially driven. Obviously, you need that. But I think there's other metrics that are equally as important to drive success for us.
Yeah. And like you said, too, you know, we all win when our youth or adults are playing sports. So it's so important to continue advocating for the accessibility and the inclusion of, you know, the sporting industry as a whole. And Burlington Soccer and thousands of other, you know, nonprofits, even in our local area, Niagara region, there's so many out there that provide these programs for young athletes and adults to kind of encourage the sporting play. So 100%. Thank you so much for coming. And I'll pass it over for Agram.
Hi there, Samantha. Thank you very much for your time. My question is more so with regards to how you would manage people. So you mentioned how you need to understand people as a way to kind of work well with them. And you mentioned you take more of a direct approach where some others might not. What does this look like in practice? Are there specific strategies that you and your team use to better understand someone's working style or their motivations? How does this work?
I think my direct communication style is not directly related or correlated to my leadership style. So I'm going to make that very, very clear. The way I communicate is not the way I lead. That's just a facet of leadership, to be honest, is communication. It's not the entirety of it. I very much so believe in transformational leadership styles and motivating your staff. So I very much so believe in that and providing them with the tools for success. So while my communication style is certainly direct, the reality is in this sport space, I deal with 90% male. And so as a female, I am just genuinely more direct because I just am trying to make sure they are understanding what I'm communicating. And as a female, I feel in this space, you just need to be more direct. I don't, whether that's the truth or not, it's been my experience for the last 10 years. So it's just how I communicate and how I found has been effective. However, when I manage my own staff or manage volunteers, I'm very different based on sort of who they are, their ages. I recognize that that's going to have an impact. Their backgrounds are going to have an impact in how I communicate to them. But my leadership style is to always empower them and provide them with the tools so they can be successful. So, because when they win, I win, and then the organization wins. So I think that's incredibly important. But yes, I just want to be very clear that my leadership style and my communication are different.
Thank you for that.
So much fantastic stuff. We've given you a lot of questions. You have given us a lot of fantastic answers here. On behalf of my entire class, on behalf of the Center for Sport Capacities Soccer Working Group, I want to thank you so much for your time and your insight.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
I think about all these sad things till you start to get it.